Yeah, five after is our usual tradition, so over to you, ma'am.
Okay. Thanks, everybody, for joining. First item is present and apologies. Christina, can you let us know?
Sure. On the call today from the CCNSO, we have Hugo Akiri, Becky Burr, Christy Spain, Stephen Deerhockey, Desiree Milosevic, Patricia Poblete, Catherine Reynolds, Nigel Roberts, Bill Semick, and Dr. Spark DeBlanc. And from the GAC, we have Frank March. From Liaisons, we have Sherry Langdonor and Carlos Aguera. From Staff Support and Special Advisors, we have Jaap Akkerhuis, Kim Davies, Christina Nordstrom, and Bernie Turcott. And apologies from Keith Davidson, Eberhard Lisse, Martin Boyle, and Bart Boswinkel.
Thank you. The next order of business is confirmation of the meeting report for the 12th January meeting. That's the document that's up on the screen.
Cool. Yeah, as, I guess the cut and paste was a little too quick for Keith. It's actually for the 9th of February meeting.
Oh, I was going to say this seemed like a long time ago. Yes, and it is properly marked, just not on the on the agenda. So this is the meeting notes for the 9 February meeting. Does anybody have changes, comments, questions, concerns?
Short and sweet, as it was meant to be.
Hearing no questions, shall we accept them? Do we have a motion? Or do we just do this by acclamation?
If no one opposes, we think of it as approved by everyone.
Okay. There it is. Let's think of it as approved. Okay, and then on to the next topic is the discussion on the GAC response to the consent topic. Bernie, do you want to just describe the we don't have the GAC. Oh, here it comes. So the draft GAC comments, you want to just summarize this? And
well, it was really just to make sure if there were any additional comments from not the 9 February call, because we didn't chat about it, but from the previous call at the end of January where we did not have a large attendance. So it was really to continue if there were any additional input. Probably what's useful to say at this point is that the exec is drafting a response for the GAC, and we hope to have that ready prior to Costa Rica, and we'll circulate it on the list since we don't have any more meetings. So I'm going to send it back over to you to moderate if there are any further additions or comments on the draft GAC response.
Okay. Does anybody have any comments on this GAC response? It, I think a great deal of it is, is not particularly complicated or controversial. It does get into the issues of that we've been talking about, you know, how one would read the absence of a response.
I think Bill has his hand up.
Oh, I'm sorry, Bill.
Hi. Bernie, could you just quickly summarize what our response is?
Well, I believe that what we're saying is essentially that we welcome the GAC support for the recommendations on consent. We understand they've made a whole bunch of great suggestions. We don't think we need to handle them directly in the consent paper. There's a lot of stuff that is has been announced that is planned to be worked on in other reports. And we detail the reasons and where those things are. So essentially, I think what we're saying is We take on all the points, and they will all be addressed, but they don't necessarily require a change of the consent document, as it is the summary.
So just so I understand, because I don't see the document, maybe I should wait for it.
As I said, it's going to be finished up by the exec and sent to the email list before Costa Rica, so it's not out yet.
Good. Just a concern of mine would be that we are somehow agreeing to this 60-day termination or whatever, as opposed to recognizing the need for some kind of definition of what the difference is between lack of consent or response versus, you know, somebody just disappeared from the face of the earth.
Right. I don't think it. We propose to adopt a 60-day deadline or anything like that. Those issues are all going to come up in the. We're going to have to address them, but we haven't gotten there yet.
Okay.
Frank has his hand up. Frank.
My apologies. I put myself on mute. I just wanted to confirm that your interpretation is correct. As I recall the discussion we had, there's some debate as to whether the 60 days should be in here or not, or whether it's something which in itself would require some sort of policy development process following this. But the 60 days definitely was not a firm one. It was simply taken as an indication that some sort of time frame would be useful. Thanks.
Thank you. Other comments? No other comments. Okay, so the plan is that a draft response will be circulated with the intention of getting it out to IGAC before Costa Rica. I think our next meeting is in Costa Rica on Thursday. Is that correct, Bernie?
That is correct. 1300 local time on Thursday, which is the 15th of March.
Okay. I guess that we've been incredibly efficient and gotten through the entire agenda in 7 minutes. Is that right, or is there more ways? Nope, I'm sorry, I'm wrong. Public consultation. I had to scroll down on the screen. Okay, we have, do you want to update the group on the final consent report and the public consultations on that?
Thank you, ma'am. Yes. The final report obtaining and documenting consent for CCTLD delegation and redelegation, basically for those that were on the DRD working group and the final reports, what we've done is, A, we have changed nothing. So it's a reformatting job and a presentation job for the final report. And basically, we've taken various things and created an executive summary. I'm not going to go through it. There are no new recommendations. The original recommendations have not been changed. It's purely packaging exercise. And if there are comments or questions, I'll be glad to take them.
And when would we be posting this? When would we be proposing to post this, Bernie?
I'm hoping that if the group is agreeable today, we would really, really like to get this approved today, especially given there are no modifications from the original consent document that was approved by the group.
So we probably should just look quickly at the executive summary and because that's new content, although it is not new, it doesn't even appear to be new words, really.
The executive summary is a cut and paste from a variety of documents we've all seen, so there's very little that is new. only the bottom part where we talk about a summary of the recommendations before including the detail of the recommendations further on in the report.
Right. Comments on this report? Bill? Bill, you have your hand up, but I can't hear you.
Yeah, on, you know, it's a minor issue, but it has meaning. On, where did it go? Section 1.2.2, at least it's probably a different numbering on yours because whenever I open anything in Word, it creates a whole bunch of numbers. But anyway, in D.
Oh, I don't even have a 1.2.2.
Yeah, that's what I mean. My system probably created its own numbering scheme. But under recommendations D, IANA undertakes.
Let me go find that, Bill, before you go further. So under D?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go try and find D, so that...
Yeah, there.
D, okay. 1.2.2?
Yes.
Okay.
The word party should be plural possessive instead of singular possessive, since both parties need to give their consent.
That's right. Bernie, do you see what he's pointing at?
Sorry, I was on mute. That's only grammatical correction.
Right.
Bill, and you are great on that. I think we can make that change without any compromise or hoopla.
Otherwise, I'm good.
Okay, excellent. Any objections to posting today? Getting it out? I think we will take that as approval.
Well done.
Hey. Okay. Bernie, can you update us on the significantly interested parties consultation?
I did not check today. Let me have a look. I've got it as a bookmark. As far as I know, there had been only one submission. There is still only one submission from Anthony Vancouvering. That's about it. Unfortunately, that submission will force us to go into the extended mode consultation as per the new rules for public consultations at ICANN. But that's life. That's okay. I think Anthony's comments are interesting, but I don't think they're going to change anything relative to what we've proposed. And that's my report on where we are with the SIP public consultation.
Okay, I see Cheryl's hand up. Can I just ask you, Bernie, first to just outline for us what the extended consultation schedule means?
Means that after the consultation is closed, we need to sort of post, if I understand it properly, because we haven't gone through this, and Bart's the expert, and unfortunately he can't make this call. So the working group will post a reply to the notes that have been given on the consultation, and then there is a second part of the consultation where those that have replied can...
No,
you're wrong.
No, Bernie, that's not right. We don't post anything. It's simply a case of having a comment period and then having a period called, I don't know what it's called, the reply period, where people can reply specifically to comments made.
Well, there we go.
In simple terms, that's it.
Yeah, so we're going to have that extended period available.
Okay, I'm going to just, Christina, could you announce what the code for mute is? Somebody is having problems.
Oh, sure. It's star 6 to mute and star 7 to unmute.
Okay, great. Cheryl?
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to say that I know it's not closed off yet, but Bernie, the ALAC is not going to respond to this. And I thought, that particularly with the issues that went off, it would be important for me to put on the record that there will be no response from the ALAC on this public consultation phase. And in fact, if we were to say anything, it would be nothing but, well done, thank you very much, which we don't intend to do, because we didn't want to trigger the additional time. But now it's been triggered, so never mind.
Okay. All righty. Thank you. The next agenda item is further discussion on the issues raised on the list, especially regarding what the reference to misbehavior might mean and what might be meant by Ayanna stepping in. Just to sort of summarize what I think at least two positions are, that with respect to the misbehavior, the question on the table really seems to be whether the duties of the registrar as the trustee in the non-legal sense of that word for the community is part of the range of considerations with respect to misbehavior. And then I don't think we've actually had any discussion on the list regarding what stepping in means. So, Nigel, you've been very quiet about this issue.
Do we have Nigel on the call?
I thought he was on the call. I thought I thought he was listed. Okay. This is a question that we will have to resolve, and I think that there are, there's some fairly firmly held opinions that the reference to substantial misbehavior is a reference to sort of technical operation of the TLD only with respect to any kind of revocation issue, and that if it means anything else, it does not come up in the delegation in the redelegation context. Does anybody want to? I am having a hard time figuring out how we can read the word, the duty to serve the community out of the definitions of required, expected behavior. But that clearly is a term that can be used as a sort of, it can be abused. And so we do have to, we have to talk about it and make sure we understand what we mean by that.
Can I put my hand up?
Yes.
I'm actually got the call forwarded, and I'm actually outside right now, so I'm not on the Adobe chat room. The interesting thing is that, I know that this is the CCNSO Framework of Interpretation Working Group, and everybody in the call and in the group is very concerned with CCTLD matters. But the fact is that RFC 1591 was written to apply to all then-in-existence TLDs, including .com. And I would be very interested to see how we interpret that in terms of the context of this duty to serve the community wording. One of the things that I got shot down with, I suggested that, it's a fact because I was there, that back in the day, in 1996, the duty to serve the community was the duty to operate the zone file with technical competence. Because back in the day, most TLDs either edited the zone file manually or they had some fairly simplistic but efficient automated means of doing so. So what I suggested was that we could take today's context and interpret that in today's light. So technical competence means operating the registry competently as well as operating just the DNS competently. But somebody, and I forget who it was, shot me down on that. So, as you say, there's some strong opinions in that.
Yeah,
Becky.
Yeah.
When it's Chris, when you've got a when it's my turn, sir.
Pardon me?
I'd like to speak when it's my turn, thank you.
Okay, you may speak, and then Patricio after you.
Okay, so a couple of things. Nigel's point about .com, I agree with the interpretation. I agree that 1591 was intended at that time, blah, blah, blah. But I think that in respect to .com and in fact in respect to all of the GTLDs that existed at that time, if indeed there were any others, that 1591 has been superseded by contractual arrangements between ICANN and the individual registries. And I don't think there's any way getting around to that in the same way that I would argue that if any CCTLDs have individual contracts with ICANN, then those contracts effectively superseded 1591 by voluntary arrangement between the two parties. So I'm not sure that there's anything much to be gained by discussing this in the context of GTLDs. In respect to what misbehavior means and what is the operating for the trust the local community. I think there's a lot more debate to be had on that issue and whether that can happen on this call and on the list. But there's a way to go yet before we get clarity on it. I just want to say one thing, which is that I think it depends on how deep you want to go into this. But I think the use of the word misbehavior is in a legal interpretation is likely to be interpreted slightly more widely and specifically in respect to, technically managing the zone file. It's an unusual word to use in the context of purely technical matters and fits much more comfortably linguistically in the context of the community. But that's just a passing comment. Thanks.
Okay, Patricio?
Yeah. About what Nigel said, I tend to think that we cannot interpret this misbehavior as strictly limited to being competent in the technical operation of the registry. Even in the early days, before the RFC 1591 was published, there were problems with CCTLD managers somehow trying to take advantage of that position to favor their particular ISP if they were competing with others and if they were an ISP, for instance. And I think that's one reason why in RFC 1591, in number 3, it says the designated manager must be equitable to all groups in the domain that request domain names. And this means that the same rules are applied to all requests and a number of other things. And this non-discrimination clause, if it were not followed by the manager, I think it would be interpreted as misbehavior.
Okay. I concur with Patricio's interpretation.
Yeah, it's Nigel, and that's exactly, Patricio is exactly right. That is indeed embedded in 1591.
I hear a but coming.
No, there's no but. I mean, I was actually going to refer to that. There are two things here. There's the requirement to operate with competence, and there's the misbehavior clause for revocation. The two are separate. In 1996, the requirement to operate with technical competence necessarily only referred to operating the DNS with technical competence because there was nothing else. I suggested on about two or three calls ago that you would now purposively interpret the clause to include technical competence in operating a registry. And I recall there was a howl from a couple of people, and I can't remember who it was now. It wasn't Eberhard, it was somebody else. Was it you, Bill?
Oh, okay. I just wanted to check to see if anybody had a hand up. I'm a little confused about what you're saying, Nigel.
Becky, I can't hear you now. There's an enormous crackling.
Stephen, you need to go on mute.
Okay, the operator has muted you now, Stephen, and star 7 if you want to speak.
Nigel, I'm not sure I followed you. Are you saying that there's some set of things that fall into misbehavior, and then there's technical competence that's separate?
Yes, I think there's two different duties here. There's a duty to be technically competent, which is, and again, if you look at it even more carefully, probably applies at the delegation phase, although it's hard to understand how you could only apply to delegation phase and not thereafter. There is then misbehavior. Now, misbehavior implies something a little bit more than just being incompetent. Misbehavior implies some kind of intentional thing, the way Patricia was describing it. And if you read 1591, John Postel clearly, because he'd had experience, I'm sure, was dealing with a situation whereby you had a country where the internet was emerging. Let's say there were two or three ISPs. One of them became the ccTLD manager and said, well, I'm giving free domain names to all my customers, but everybody else has to pay $1,000. That's misbehavior. It's not substantial misbehavior, it's misbehavior. Substantial misbehavior might be misbehavior that's repeated when told not to do it anymore. I don't know. But that's where we're going with misbehavior and substantial misbehavior.
Okay, so here's my question. I just start reading this, and I come to in section 3 before the bullet points. It says the designated manager, the major concern is that they be able to carry out the necessary responsibilities and have the ability to do it in an equitable, just, honest, and competent job, to do an equitable, just, honest, and competent job. And then there are these points after it. So where do the equitable, just, honest parts come into that, or do they, in your analysis?
Oh, I think that specifically refers to the test you have to pass to get the delegation.
Nigel, can I just stop you for a second? If you have to pass that test to get the delegation, doesn't it inexorably follow that you are expected to behave that way?
I think I said something along those lines about 2 minutes ago, Chris.
I agree, yeah.
But I think that falls into misbehavior.
Okay.
So, in other words, what you're saying is you have to show that, and let's be blunt here, you have to show you know how to configure a DNS zone file. That's what it meant. Once you've done that, you have to carry on doing that, probably. But there's no explicit clause saying that. It's implicit, I think. And it's implicit in the fact that if you don't do that, it's not quite misbehavior, but it is in a way. Misbehavior, to my mind, means something intentional and has some kind of guilty mind to it, some kind of wrongdoing associated with it, as in the scenario that Patricio mentioned. So you can't just, say, for example, I'll give you this. In 1990, let me think of what it was, 6, .com went off the air because of an incompetent behavior. Now, one incident of .com going off the air shouldn't have been enough for the IANA to revoke the delegation of .com. And, of course, it didn't.
Right.
But so if, for example, the name servers for the entire TLD become non-authoritative every other week, that's misbehavior. Whether it's substantial or not is a matter for the individual fact.
The misbehavior is actually not fixing the issue.
Yeah,
if you want to be very specific about this example, the misbehavior would be not fixing the issue.
Okay. So this discussion is a little bit about what, you know, how you get from misbehavior to substantial misbehavior. But I still, Nigel, there's Section 2 says that the authorities have a duty to serve the community. And so,
and when you read that word carefully, it talks about the community being global as well as local, yes.
Correct. So
and
what does that mean?
A duty to serve the community. Well, it's precatory words, isn't it? It's hope and moral obligation and grand fine words.
Motherhood and apple pie.
And nothing more?
Well, I'm struggling a little.
Okay, I just want to push this a little bit because we know,
I mean, you know,
it's,
and I
it's
know
not
that
a
we
popularity
all do.
Contest. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you know, and I know what we all as TLD managers do. We serve the community. But what is that in a sense of, I hate to use the word law, but in the sense of mutual obligations here? And again,
Bill,
I'm struggling a bit.
Bill?
It's like the old trust deed or in a will saying, I leave you all my money on the basis that you use it to do good works in the community.
Bill,
that's
do you have
my gift.
Yep. Bill Semich? I think you're on mute, Bill.
Becky, as chairman, I'm just going to drop from the call and come straight back in.
Okay.
Seven, one of those things. It's always been my belief that the duty is related to, you know, managing the top-level domain and nothing more. It's not like you're going out giving blood every other day on the job or building, you know, schools or anything like that. I mean, people can do that as part of their charter as an entity, but I don't think that's what's being required here. What's being required here is to realize that what you're doing is managing a service for the community and not something purely for your in-crowd of private people who want to go out and hoard domain.
Okay, I agree. I mean, I definitely agree that it would be hard to read, you know, something outside. It's, you know, serving the community in the operation of the CCTLD. I think that makes sense to me.
I also had my hand up in response to some of the things Nigel said. Once we get back there.
Okay. Yeah, so I don't think Nigel has come back on.
And that relates to a little bit of apples and oranges. I think Nigel said that substantial misbehavior would be if .com were dead every week. But I don't think that substantial misbehavior that section applies to DNS failing. I'm back to number four where the further down in number four, where is it? Maybe it's number five? Or, yeah, satisfactory job of operating the DNS service. I mean, that's the revocable action, and it clearly states it. I'm not even sure that the misbehavior and the stepping in implies a revocation. Stepping in might be, you know, sending out IANA technical shock troops to help somebody or whatever. I don't know. I'm just saying, so I don't think we have come to a point where we know what what it is, the misbehavior is, nor what the stepping in is, but I definitely don't think it's incorrect or poor or incompetent operation of the DNS, since that's covered in Section 5.
So what would be misbehavior in your reading?
I think it would be related to this serving the community properly. But again, I'm not sure we're talking about a revocable act by IANA if they step in. I think, we do have a little tough row here to hoe coming up with these interpretations, which are agreeable to all of us. But, the stepping in issue, I think, needs to be solved before we figure out what misbehavior is one thing for me.
Well, that's interesting. Patricio, you have your hand up, and then Desiree. And
yeah,
Chris, are you...
I was on mute.
I'd like to get in the queue, Becky.
Okay.
In the RFC, there's a list of obligations for the manager, like that the domain has to be managed in a competent way, in an ethical way, and so on. And one would have expected that there would have been a general remedy for the cases when the manager is not complying with any of these, but only in number 3 there is this sentence about the IANA stepping in when there is misbehavior, and that's one problem I have when trying to interpret this document. Actually, it's number 4 from the significantly interested parties section. That's the problem I have when I'm trying to interpret this document. Why it is only number 4 that there is this penalty or something that could apply when there is misbehavior. What happens if there is misbehavior with regards to some other of the obligations? That doesn't seem to be anything for that. And that's why I tend to interpret that this misbehavior sentence and the possibility of IANA stepping in should apply to all instances of non-compliance by the manager, not only to number 4.
Thank you, Patricio. Desiree, and then Chris. Desiree, I think you're on mute. *7. Chris, while Desiree's working on that, do you want to step in?
Sure. No court. Bottom line is if this ever ended up in court, what we're trying to do is come up with a series of guidelines and interpretations that will stand up to scrutiny. No court is going to interpret 1591 purely on a clause-by-clause basis, in other words, taking each clause in isolation. Neither is it going to look at a clause and apply specific... Sorry, I'll start again. If it looks at a particular clause and apply specific examples to it, unless you can come up with a roadmap of where the clause takes you, just to have a circular clause that says, we don't know where this takes us, is meaningless, and the court won't agree to that. So, as a simple example, if you had a CCTLD where the manager refused to delegate domain names, so they're not technically incompetent. The DNS is running fine. The root zone is running fine. Zone file rather is running fine. But they refuse to delegate domain names. Or, a finer case, they refuse to delegate domain names to the government. Now, unless anyone is suggesting that is not covered, it seems to me that one way to work through what these clauses might mean is to use specific examples where we might be generally comfortable, we think, illustrating bad behavior, and work backwards from there.
Okay, Desiree, are you able to? Whatever's going on, Christina seems to be continuing to be. Oh, Desiree, are you there? No. Okay.
Becky, Desiree is only in the Adobe room. She's not on the phone bridge.
Oh, okay. So she's going to type it in. I mean, Nigel, one of the issues that I struggle with when I read this is what I think Chris was just articulating, which is, you know, at least under, you know, statutory construction here, a court would attempt to ascribe meaning to all of the provisions of a document. If the duty to serve the community is not doesn't have a separate meaning, then it's, you know, it's superfluous. Desiree has typed that misbehavior does not relate purely to the technical management of the DNS or the TLD, but there is a policy and commercial aspect to it that the operate and, you know, governance models taken down from the DNS.
Well, that goes back to that whole business of, you know, I'll sell you my, you know, sell my neighbor's one for a dollar, but for you it's 100. It's that kind of misbehavior.
Right. That seems to me also to be covered by the word equitable.
I think so, too, yeah.
I think we might find that word proves to be quite important if this is ever litigated.
Kim is typing something. I'm sorry, you think it would be quite important if it was litigated?
I think the word equitable, you and I have had this discussion before, yeah. Becky, about the nature of any binding obligations that might have been created. And I think that's where they might lie, in the principles of equity rather than principles of law.
I can just say what I typed, if you like. Sorry. I was just going to say, many CCTLDs today already do some kind of price discrimination depending on the type of registrar. And I think the question is whether it's been developed through a public process or guided by public interest principles in developing the particular pricing structure. So I think it's not black and white, a lot of these issues. It's the process by which you came up to what you've done.
I think that's quite a dangerous road for an outsider, whether it's me or you, to go down to judge the local context.
Possibly so.
Let me put this on the table as an example, because with AS, if it's an on-island registration, it's free. If it's not on-island, it's not free. Are we being discriminatory here in violation of the RFC?
Stephen, that's a good question, and it comes back to the use of the word. I'm sorry to do this, but I want to be very specific about you, because you used the word equitable, right?
Yeah,
I want to make absolutely sure that, well, yes, there's a difference between using the word equitable in the context that it's currently being used and discussing whether it's a legal obligation in equity or in common law. The two things are different. So I just think it's important to make the point that what equitable has a simple meaning generally. It has nothing to do with necessarily with the law of equity. But again, Stephen, what it seems to me we need to be able to do is to find an acceptable test against which we could put your just described behavior and come to the conclusion that in fact you are, that you meet the test. And equally, we could put some examples that we all agree don't meet the test up against that test and have them fail.
Gotcha.
Right. I do think that makes sense. I mean, equitable sort of, to me means fair. It doesn't mean identical necessarily.
Yes,
I would
sure.
accept that because for my standpoint, equitable is if the domain is available and you're the first one to ask for it, whether you're on island or off island, you are have first right to that, whether it's on island for free or off island for a fee.
The thing, there's actually another way of looking at this in your particular case. And I would suggest, and just bear with me for a while if it sounds wacky to start with, I would suggest that you're actually charging everybody the same, including on-island and off-island, and that you're making a donation to the on-island people in order so that they can get it for effectively to them no cost.
Well, that I mean, this is an issue about context, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're doing good works for your local internet community by forgiving or waiving any charge that you might otherwise have made.
Yes, but is that equitable? Under what we're talking about.
It's not equal, but it may be equitable.
So, Chris, I kind of like your notion of trying to sort of articulate some things that we think, would pass the test and some things that wouldn't, and then try to figure out what the difference is. Otherwise, it is potentially very subjective.
I think it's quite interesting, and I'd like to pursue what Chris is suggesting. What I think he's suggesting is that we use inductive reasoning to get where we're going.
I think you may be right that that's what I'm suggesting, Nigel, although I wasn't clear that I was suggesting that until you just suggested it.
I just knew you were going to say something like that.
Okay.
Becky, I think we can do some work on this on the list.
Okay.
If we were to start with a sort of, even like a clean sheet of paper and throw up a whole series of completely ridiculous examples that are quite clearly in the test and quite clearly out of the test, and then start molding a test from there, I would have thought. But it's going to be hard, and we're going to need to concentrate on it It's not going to happen very quickly, I don't think.
There's also
right.
a danger
I,
that we're... Sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah. There's also a danger that we're going to run across in doing this, and I'm not suggesting there's any reason we should not do it, is that we may come up with something that we all agree is one side of the line, the other side of the line. And then we turn around and we find that a CCTLD, and I'm not going to pick any particular continent, but a CCTLD down somewhere is doing exactly that. And they're a member of our community and they're going to get upset.
Yeah, but the purpose of this, Nigel, is not to hold the examples up, but to simply use them to, as you have said, for reasoning purposes.
I'm happy with that.
And if we're going to be concerned that eventually one day ACCTLD might do one of the things that we think breaches it, and that's and therefore we can't have that rule, then we're wasting our time.
No, I'm not suggesting.
I know you were.
I'm not suggesting. I'm suggesting that we ought to be prepared for a little bit of political fallout.
Absolutely.
Right, and I do think this requires, you know, some further consideration, some putting some of those examples on the table, and I think clearly it would be important in this debate to sort of understand where GAC members are coming from as well, so that we're so that we understand the whole picture. I think that Bill has his hand up. Bill?
Part of my concern here is that I'm not sure that this whole equitable, fair, and so on treatment concept applies to what might be called price discrimination. Couple things. Obviously, this was written at a time when there really was only one real registrar, and that was always the registry, whether it was NSI for .com or NICFR for France or whatever. And so the concept of price competition, which is also could be seen as price discrimination, really wasn't on the table as far as prices were concerned. And also, these names were all being registered for free anyway in, I would say, all cases during that time period. So I'm going to suggest that we not try to get too confused with the concept of pricing, which is a commercial model idea, and equitable treatment, meaning rules are fair and applied to everyone equally, similar concept. Now, the rules are fair and applied to everyone equally, in fact, could be easily interpreted to mean if a name is two characters, you can charge more for it than if it's four, because everyone who wants a two-character name will have to pay more for it. That's fair and equal. So these are kind of the kinds of concepts I'd like to put forward for any draft report on this thing to consider.
Okay, so I think the suggestion is here to take this issue to the list and to have people suggest examples of things that are that they view as clearly on one side or the other of the standard.
I think the examples will help us to draft a sort of standard, Becky. I suppose we start with, you don't necessarily have to have the words of the standard
right.
formed.
No,
you have to have it coming together of minds.
Exactly. I meant to say was sort of examples of things that are clearly okay and things that are clearly not okay so that the standard can
exactly.
be articulated.
Exactly. Or inducted, as Nigel would probably suggest, by reasoning.
Okay. All right. And then, Bernie, are we prepared? It seems to me difficult to have a view about what stepping in means unless we have at least some view of what the standard is, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, can I speak on this?
Yes.
I think stepping in is very simple. It means doing something. I thought I'd captured it in an email some weeks ago. I think the question you're asking is not what does stepping in means, but what are the tools that are available and what is not available.
Yeah, what are the options?
Yeah. But stepping in basically means the IANA will do something.
Okay. I can go with that. Any other comments on that?
Well, the comment that then follows is, would the something be anything short of outright revocation?
Well, again, you can start to look at that by listing what IANA could do. So, for example, well, it can't fine you, doesn't have the power to do so. It can't. There's a whole lot of things it can't do. The question is what, when looking at interpretation, the question is what is it within its power to do? But that clearly then is your grab bag of options. And then the next question is, at what stage is it equitable to take, you know, that piece from the grab bag and use that? So a really stern letter publicly posted on the website might, for example, be something that Diana could do. What would it, you know, when would that be reasonable? And so on.
And then, of course, we get to the very interesting question is, and I like your analogy of a grab bag, what pieces of the grab bag are available de jure and are available de facto? In other words, just because they can do something, is it legal?
That's correct. But you can always, but in this, in our context, Nigel, and what we're trying to do, there's nothing to prevent us from deferring to a, we think they can do this. If they do do it, it would be a matter for the courts to decide whether they have the right to do so. We don't have the obligation, nor do we, nor for that matter, the skill.
In other words, it's out of scope. I agree. It was a comment in passing, but we're beginning to zero in on some very interesting territory.
Yep. Okay, so that sounds like a plan, Bernie. Are you okay with that plan?
It's a way forward, and therefore I love it.
All right.
Can you summarize it all?
So we are going to start by offering examples of actions or behaviors or conduct that we think would be certainly permissible, and other examples of behaviors, conduct that we think would be clearly problematic. And from those examples, attempt to identify and articulate the principle that's driving them. But you know, it's kind of lining things up and seeing if we all, you know, agree what side of the line things fall on, and then figure out from that what.
Gotcha. That should make for a lively list for a week or so.
Yeah.
If you think that's going to be over in a week, Stephen.
Well, we'd like it to be just a week, but it'll probably be longer.
I suspect you're right.
Becky, before we leave the call, can I throw in one to get us started?
Yes.
Nigel, just before you do, Becky, I'm going to have to go now because I have a meeting to go to, so I'll leave the call, and thanks very much, everybody. See you all in Costa Rica.
Yeah,
cheers,
thanks
Chris.
For your participation tonight.
Okay, people, don't start leaving. You have to approve the progress report before you leave, okay? So after Nigel's thing, we actually have one little bit of business to do.
Okay, well, mine's quite simple. An example of what is acceptable behavior, charging a fee for registration or annual maintenance of a domain name.
Okay.
Wasn't always obvious, if you remember.
All right, everyone. I think Nigel's launched it, and I'll be glad to be the record keeper and compile all of this. But let's do them on the list so we have a nice solid track of that.
Yeah, I'll put our policy out there.
That's also helpful. Cheryl has Kim is charging $1 million per domain per year, and Cheryl's suggestion is that this is something that might be on the Costa Rica agenda, and I do think this is such an important issue that you know, we should consider really kind of wading into it in Costa Rica as well.
Okay. Desiree has her hand up.
I think Desiree has had her hand up.
Okay.
Okay. All righty. The progress report is up and would be posted in advance of the Costa Rica meeting. Bernie, will you walk us through it, please?
Thank you, ma'am. We're a usual disclaimer when this is the case. There is no policy making. There is no new things. Repackaging our reality. So basically, it's short, and I will walk through the whole thing because it's short and sweet. We met 7 times by teleconference. We have meeting notes. We have transcripts of the teleconference, so we're telling people about that. We completed the public consultation on the topic of consent. We published its final report on the topic of consent, which we have approved on this call. Thank you very much. Updated its terminology document as per the final report on the topic of consent. Launched the public consultation on the topic of significantly interested parties and begun work on the topic of revocation or unconsented redelegations. Our current status on consent, the public consultation on the topic of consent closed. We have the details. The FOIG received input, blah, 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 blah. So this is the stuff we talked about today. Significantly interested parties. The working group has completed its initial work on the topic of significantly interested parties and published its interim report on the topic for a public consultation. The public consultation will close on 30 March. Revocation or unconsented redelegation. The working group has begun its work on this topic. Yes, Bill, I'll pick it up. Its work on this topic in January 2012. It is expected that this will be the most complex topic to be dealt with by the FOI Working Group. The FOI Working Group will concentrate on this topic at its meeting in Costa Rica. Terminology. The results of the final report of consent were included in the draft terminology document. Activities in Costa Rica. The chair and vice chair of the FOI Working Group will be presenting an update on the activities of the working group, the final report on consent, and the interim report on SIP to the GAC and the CCNSO. The FOI Working Group will be holding a meeting on Thursday, March 15, 2012, 1300 to 1600 local time. Participants are reminded that these meetings of the FOI Working Group are always open to the public as observers. Conclusion of the report, the one grammatical thing noted to be fixed. Madam Chair, over to you.
Okay. It looks like we've been very busy. Any comments on the report? I've got Cheryl. I don't know what Cheryl's signal means. And Bill, you have your hand up. Bill?
No, Bill.
Bill, are you there? I think you've got us on mute.
Okay, I hit the wrong button.
Ah.
Butter fingers. I do have some concern under current status, consent, paragraph 4, once the report. I'm not comfortable with the concept that we're actually going to wait for GAC to approve the report. It is our report, of CNSO, CCNSO, and so on. But I know we want GAC's input and advice and recommendation, and I would be much more comfortable if we had language like that in there.
I think part of the problem is that's not the way it's described in the charter. When we finish recommendations, we forward them to the CCNSO and the GAC for approval.
I'd be surprised. I might have been asleep when we approved the charter, but throw it at me on the list, and I'll comment.
Will do.
Thanks.
Other comments? Okay.
Does Bill's question prevent us from approving this?
I guess that we would have to we would have to approve subject to resolution of what the charter says. I mean, Bill, just in the event that
maybe we can get a pending approval that I discuss this with Bill on the list and we come to resolution of the issue.
That works for me.
Okay. Other comments? Hearing none, we will We will, it's approval pending the two of you working out what this issue.
Thank you, ma'am.
Okay. Any other business? Do we have any other business other than the fact that there will be a meeting in Costa Rica on Thursday, March 13th, 1300 to 1530? Bill, you've got, I think you've re-raised your hand.
Yes. Can you hear me okay? Okay.
Yep.
All right.
The date is wrong. It's the 15th, by the way.
Ah, okay.
Oops.
I just wanted to take a chance to bring up topic I raised on the list some time ago, which was met by a thundering silence, and that's the concept of an appeal to a review panel or whatever that exists in RFC 1591. Maybe it's a bad idea, but I think we should at least deal with it at some point.
So, I mean, 1591 does very clearly contemplate the creation of some sort of a panel. The question I have is, beyond that, would certainly proposals for how the panel would be constituted or operate would involve policy development, presumably.
Becky?
Yes, Tim?
You've just anticipated what I was about to say. We do need to interpret that particular clause, and I do think we need to note that RFC 1591 clearly foresaw the establishment of an appellate or review function. It's equally obvious to note that that's never been exercised, even in the most controversial of redelegations, and to note that that is definitely something that we should recommend for policy development, something like that.
That's where I come out. Bill, do you have a different perspective on that?
I don't really have much of a defined perspective, except the fact that it was provided there. There are good things about something like that. There are bad things, especially if there's legal liability and so on. So I think it might require some investigation prior to a PDP to see if it's even feasible in light of the current structure of things compared to the way they were back in 1996, 94, or 88, or whenever these things got written. So I'm really just raising it as a discussion topic. Maybe might be worth a breakout group or something. I'm not convinced that we need to recommend the PDP.
I am.
Sorry?
I said I am so convinced, and I'll give you my reasoning for that. The reason I think that there needs to be policy development on this is that from my knowledge of the time, as you will probably remember because you were around at the same time, the IDNB was John himself. So John was both the person who decided and the person who reviewed it, and that ain't going to fly.
So I think that probably almost anything that we do beyond acknowledging that is contemplated in 1591 and hasn't been implemented is sort of next phase. I think there is, yes, there is a question about whether, a PDP should be developed for this, but I think that all is a later stage of our work and not clearly on our mandate.
Okay, I'll take a look at it again and give it some thought.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, Kim, you have your hand raised, but I don't know if you have...
I was just going to make the comment that, when RFC 1591 was written, it was a staff-level action to approve delegations and redelegations by the IANA staff. And what we have today is we have effectively a two-stage review process. We have staff review, and if it effectively gets past staff and staff agree that the change should be implemented, it goes to a panel, and that panel is the ICANN board. Now, whether that's satisfactory or not, I'll leave it for everyone else to decide, but I think it is, there is some concept of a secondary review, and that is the review by this, by the board.
Can I ask a question of Kim with regard to the two-stage process?
Sure.
Which is, has the board ever gone against staff recommendation?
Yes.
On a redelegation? Really? Okay.
Yes.
The disadvantage to this, Kim, is that from my perspective, the two are one. There is no independent review.
That's fine. Like I said, obviously, whether that is satisfactory for you to decide, but I think it would be missing something to not identify that dimension that up until about 10 years ago, the process was there was no appeal process to a board. And to be honest, the board has its own appeal processes as well that's baked into ICANN as a whole. So, you know, whether you could use ICANN's own appeal processes to appeal a redelegation, I don't know. But, you know, built into the structure of ICANN, that's something new that wasn't in existence when 1591 was developed.
Okay. My suggestion is that we do further contemplation about sort of where the scoping issues arise in the context of this discussion, and then, you know, discuss it when we have more of that, when we've thought through that issue a little bit more clearly. Okay. Is there any other business, Bernie? Bart?
I believe not, ma'am. We're done, and we've done well.
All right. Thank you.
See you all in Costa Rica.
Happy all right, everyone.
Bye. Right, on. Good night, guys.
Good night.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.